are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Jeff and Eric noticed one day that nobody on the internet talked about bouvets, so they had to find a way. They'll podcast thoughts on new movies they've discovered through autumn, winter, spring, and summer on Fridays. And when you run out of films you love to do, tune into jokes, playing games, all this and more you'll find contained on BBS with Bear and Snyder.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. I am your host, Jeff Bear. This is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Ho, 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 everybody. I'm Eric D. Snyder.
Happy Christmas.
I am the host, and that's my co-host, Jeff Bear. It's the holiday season. It's festive and merry.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Well, it should. Yeah. Christmas is in like 2 days. It should be beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Did your family, you always had a Christmas tree, right?
Yes.
Yeah. When did you get your Christmas tree? Early December?
Well, we switched when I was probably maybe like 7 or 8. We switched to the fake tree.
Oh, all right.
So then, when
did you put it up then? Like
after Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Maybe even that weekend, just because it was like, I want to play with the nativity set. I want to make baby Jesus fly.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of people do that. My mom, as soon as Thanksgiving is over, she just explodes with Christmas. In movies and TV shows, people get Christmas trees Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Is that do people do that in real life? Is that a thing?
I don't think so.
Listeners, if that is a thing or was a thing in your family growing up, please tell us, because it always baffles me in movies and TV shows. It's Christmas Eve. They're just now getting the tree. That's a waste. That is a waste. You're going to go get a tree for one day? Come on.
This has been another hot take by Eric D. Snyder.
Just saying, it should not just be starting to look a lot like Christmas. It should have been done looked like Christmas for a few weeks now, or else you are way behind the curve, my friends. Or it's just not going to look like Christmas at all. Like if it's just not gonna be Christmas for you, that's fine too.
Oh sure, yeah. That's allowed.
Yeah, that's allowed too. Just saying, if it is going to be Christmas for you, you should have thought of it before now. Lots of movies.
Let's get to it.
Passengers is the movie we are talking about now.
Passengers.
Passengers takes place in space.
Ace.
Outer space.
What we're talking about mainly is, you know how everybody wants to go to Homestead 2?
Mm-hmm.
Because of all the problems of Homestead 1?
Earth is just such a crap hole.
Well, it doesn't sound like it's a crap hole. It sounds like it's just really busy.
Yeah.
Like so much is, it's so crowded.
It's
now.
Some distance in the future, so we don't know, probably don't even know what the problems are. But whatever reason, people want to leave Earth and there's a colony that's been set up on another planet. It takes 120 years to get there.
But don't worry, you just sleep the whole time.
You sleep problem the whole time, solved. Which is what I do on planes. I just go to sleep on the
so
plane,
lucky.
And I wake up, and there I am, 120 years later. But so our passenger, Chris Pratt, playing a guy named Jim, he is one of 5,000 passengers, each in their own little individual sleep pods. He wakes up. It's only been 30 years instead of 120.
There's been a bit of a malfunction.
Mm-hmm.
He comes to realize he's got 90 years left and his pod will not accept him anymore. You know how pods just stop accepting you after a while?
Well, you know how sometimes you wake up and you just can't go back to sleep? And you're like, oh, I still have time, but I can't go back to sleep. He's got 90 years to kill, but he's tossing and turning. So looks around. Nobody else on the ship is awake. And all the crew are on their pods, locked away behind special doors he can't get through. So he's hosed.
The only one he has to talk to is a robot bartender played by Michael Sheen.
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts to think about, well, what could he do? And then he remembers that he used to watch a TV show called Last Man on Earth. So he just does some of those things.
I doubt he watched that show.
But on the spaceship.
But he does do some of those things. Enjoy it. You know, being alone. You grow a beard. You run around. Wreck stuff and whatever. Having fun.
But hanging out whenever possible.
Sure. Yeah. Well, not whenever possible.
Sorry,
only,
was there not enough?
Only briefly for a couple of seconds. I'm just saying, don't say whenever possible.
Don't get these people excited.
And time passes, he's alone, and one day he happens to see in one of the pods, he notices one of the other passengers is this beautiful woman named Aurora, which you may recall was the name of Sleeping Beauty. Aurora, Princess Aurora.
And luckily, she is
indeed a Sleeping Beauty.
There, not only is there a manifesto on this spaceship, but you can access, apparently, like, all the things about the person, like the interviews and maybe their past job.
Well,
and,
yeah, all the passengers film these little video interviews, saying who they are. Because these are all strangers who are going to be living together in this colony. So, yeah, he's able to look up Aurora and see what her deal is, and he falls in love with her even while she's asleep.
Yeah, he Facebook stalks her in the future on the spaceship.
Right.
And then you realize what's going to happen with this movie. So I really liked the opening of this film. And then I realized it's funny.
It's a comedy at first, seems like. There's some funny stuff happening, and all right, this is good.
You know what was weird? I've always thought Pratt has endless supplies of charisma. I didn't quite feel it with this film as far as his performance when he was alone. I was kind of surprised that I wasn't adoring him.
Yeah, maybe
like
he
I
needs
have when other people have been alone, such as Tom Hanks or whoever.
Maybe he needs someone to play off of. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
He's his character in this movie is also kind of a tool.
And he's good with tools.
But we'll get to that.
He's a trained mechanical engineer.
So his big moral dilemma now is, should he wake up Aurora? He figured out how to wake someone out of sleep. And on the one hand, he's lonely. He's going crazy. On the other hand, if he wakes her up, then he's killing her. He's dooming her to die on this spaceship with him.
Yeah.
Now, I've never been in that situation, exactly, but I feel like, hypothetically, I did take an ethics class in college, so I feel like I got the gist of it. If the question is, do I remain lonely, or do I doom someone to death, the answer is you remain lonely.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, I feel like that's the right answer, rather than kill someone without their permission or consent or anything.
See, I think I would have just kept accidentally waking a new person up like every week or two. Oops, I bumped into your pod. I didn't mean to.
Wake up the whole group. Wake up everybody.
Of course.
Well, I could see that. Like, we're all in this together.
Like, let's figure this out together.
If I gotta die, we're all gonna die.
But yeah, so as soon as you realize he's going to wake her up, the movie becomes a lame romantic comedy, bachelor-style TV show thing where they go on fantasy dates together, and you know it's going to come to a head, so you're just waiting that 45 minutes or whatever it is for her to catch up and know the truth, because you know that has to happen.
It's a standard development that happens in every romantic comedy or romantic drama where the relationship was first predicated on a lie, and eventually the other person will find out the lie, and it'll be sad, and they'll miss each other, and it'll rain on one of them. And they'll stand outside the other one's apartment, et cetera. So we know that's what's going to happen. And I was so disappointed when I realized that that's what we were doing. But I still technically held out hope that the movie would treat it properly. That the movie, when he decided to wake her up after a brief but intense period of personal struggle over the decision, when he did, I thought, okay, now the movie has to become about his guilt over that and what that does to him for doing this. It needs to be about that. I kind of suspected it wasn't going to. But I knew that's how it could still pull out of the dive if it did that. But no, of course, it just goes on with the regular romantic comedy thing where, I mean, not full-on comedy, but light romance anywhere.
Lighthearted.
Set in space. And the music often is very intense. Like, they're trying to make this into a bigger, grander thing than it is, but it's not. And sure enough, when it comes time for sci-fi action, for things to get done, he's mostly the one that does stuff, and it's a very regressive role for Jennifer Lawrence after being a kicking butt in so many movies, to then take the secondary, the damsel in distress, the person who was acted upon and who, it's all okay. Like, oh, I'm so mad at you. Oh, golly, but you're so adorable. It's okay.
Or more importantly in this, it's like, well, you are really useful.
Well, that's true.
Like, I couldn't do this, but you can. So maybe I should be more appreciative.
Or maybe you should have just left me asleep, you tool.
Yes. And that's the thing. It could have dug deeper, and it just chose not to.
Should have. It should have dug deeper.
It it wanted to be a lighthearted Gravity with a little bit of Wally mm-hmm. thrown in there. And as I mentioned, Last Man on Earth kind of vibe. And it just wanted to be this crowd pleaser. And every time it turned to that, it failed its audience. That's how it felt.
The writer is John Spates, who recently co-wrote Doctor Strange. He worked on Prometheus. Somehow he and the director, who's the guy who directed The Imitation Game a couple years ago, mm-hmm. somehow these guys didn't, it didn't occur to them, I guess, that the plot was based on something that's kind of creepy and wrong. Like, somehow they didn't think that this would stick in anyone's craw when we watched it. And the solution is so simple. Just do what I assumed the movie was going to be about, that they just both woke up accidentally. Then you have to find a new conflict for the story. But there's still plenty of other conflict, because there's still the fact that the ship is having trouble, the things that woke
That's
him
the
up.
Thing.
They're like, there's
right.
plenty of other things to work on. We don't need this extra conflict of, oh, I lied to you and I woke you up. They could have skipped all that and made a perfectly good, enjoyable sci-fi movie.
When he doesn't get what's like coming to him, like it never really feels like he gets the proper. Wow, I am a jerk.
The movie does not. The movie doesn't treat his actions with the seriousness that the actions deserve to be
treated. And a lot of the movie just feels like, two people are trapped in a futuristic mall that's closed. Mm-hmm. You know, like that. That's kind of that lame middle vibe for me. And it just, like, it doesn't do enough with its plot. Like, once there's emergencies on the ship, there's a little bit of dilemma. There's a little bit of, like, trying to figure out what's
I like
going
this
on.
Stuff.
And that moves a little bit better than that romantic junk that neither one of them pull off and the script doesn't either.
I like the stuff, like, with the zero, they have trouble with the gravity and they're in the swimming pool. And there's some cool stuff with the ship malfunctioning and things going
visual,
wrong. And what
cool
they do.
Visual
yeah.
stuff, yes.
Enjoy that. But it's the whole thing's got a whiff of the ridiculous about it.
Oh, and also, I think there probably would be about, like, 20 to 30 better endings for this movie than what they actually decided on.
I mean, well, yeah, an ending where his actions were treated seriously would have been better.
Yeah. Yep.
For example. It's almost a good movie.
Agreed.
And then this
is the weird part. It I know is like I'm kind of railing. It's very watchable. Like you sit down, you're gonna watch the rest of it.
Yeah.
But at the same point, you're gonna shrug your shoulders and just move on.
And be disappointed in both of them, and sort of disappointed in yourself for wasting your time watching this nothing of a movie.
It's a movie that you and I will never once think about a month from now. It'll be gone and out of our system.
Well, yeah. Yeah, there'll be think pieces for the next week or so about what's wrong with it, and then it'll be forgotten mm-hmm. forgotten to time. Was there something else I want to say about this movie? There was not. Go to hell, passengers. C-.
5 out of 10.
All right, next up. Why him?
Yeah, why him?
Why him?
Why not you?
I'd be better than him.
Sure.
This is a movie about Donald Trump. No, just kidding. It's a movie about... Stop me if you've heard this one before. The dad doesn't approve of his daughter's boyfriend.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, they're on a collision course with wackiness. The dad, Bryan Cranston.
The guy is great. James Franco.
James Franco. Also occasionally great. Not in this movie necessarily, but just in general. James Franco can do great things.
Here he's layered...
Laird Mayhew, he's a tech millionaire, and he's 32, dating 22-year-old Stephanie, played by Zoe Deutsch, who I don't know
Deutsch.
Who that is.
I don't either.
And he, what they say about Laird is that he doesn't have a filter, which is kind of Hollywood shorthand for he's just going to say whatever we want. It's mm-hmm. it's your excuse to have him be just an amalgamation of character traits. Whatever will be funny in the moment, we can have him say it, if it'll be funny and shocking.
Yeah.
So he swears a lot. That's his thing. He swears a lot. And
you can't help it.
Christmas time, Stephanie and her parents, Bryan Cranston and Megan Mullally, and the 15-year-old brother all come out to his place in Palo Alto for Christmas, and it's their first time meeting him. And, you know, there's the whole meet the parents stuff going on.
Meet the parents stuff, but then there's also meet the guy who just kind of runs the house, who's named Gustav, played by Keegan-Michael Key.
Well, yeah, sort of weird German. He's his... He's his manservant, his Well, they're comparing to Kato in the Pink Panther movies.
Yeah.
And that's about right,
like
too.
He's also, though, is like business manager. He's kind like of, a little yeah. of everything.
He's kind of whatever.
Whatever the convenience is that the plot needs to keep moving forward enough, that's what he can do.
And there's some real ups and downs with the story here. There are some, it is all going to be, you know, in the eye of the beholder. There's some things that I just have no patience for, some farcical moments, like the thing, the movie starts with this, the thing where, oh, there's something offensive on the laptop, and oh, I somehow can't turn it off, and I can't close the laptop either, apparently. Those things. So stupid.
There's so stupid.
Some business with a high-tech toilet. If I never see another comedy toilet in a movie, that'll be fine with me. Because I have had it with comedy toilets. Oh, it's a high-tech toilet. Guess where it's from? Japan. Of course.
Yeah.
I'm done with the comedy toilets.
You wouldn't believe what this button can do.
Uh-huh. But then there's also stuff that made me laugh.
For the most part here, the nice thing is Laird is outlandish and everybody else is kind of sort of almost real.
Relatively like, normal, yeah.
And that's where – so we all get to enjoy that. And if you don't like James Franco, you kind of then end up identifying with – Bryan Cranston's kind of sort of weak father character. Like, yeah. I don't feel like they gave him enough to do here with the character that was written. I don't know if anybody could have gotten greatness out of that role.
Right.
There's not enough conflict, and he kind of reaches this conclusion that he doesn't like Laird, and then we wait to see how things play out. He doesn't get insane enough, like he doesn't turn
no, but
into
I like,
the attempt of Laird. And
I like
okay.
that. I like that because I like that this is not a movie where there's one guy who's annoying and one guy who is annoyed by him, but everyone else thinks he's great. It's not What About Bob. Those scenarios irritate me. Here, everyone acknowledges that Laird is obnoxious and vulgar and whatnot. But they're not, oh, what are you complaining about, Dad? What do you mean? Like, they don't overdo it. And
they don't, right.
And,
they
and what
see
comes down
some of the
to,
points.
Yeah, and what it comes down to is that Laird is a weirdo and he's vulgar, but he's honest. And I like that it comes down to him being a good-hearted person, and that kind of makes it go down a little easier. And I like that Megan Mullally is funny. She and Bryan Cranston both, not a lot to do with their characters, but they do them really well because they're both old pros who spent years and years cranking all the, you know, squeezing all the comedy you can out of sitcoms, and they're really good at it. I like what they do with what they do here.
There's a lot of surprise laughs out of what Laird is capable of doing.
Yeah.
Like there really is, especially with some of the moments that he and Gustav have kind of constructed in this mansion, as far as like a training to potentially be ready if you know, anybody ever tries to kidnap Laird, he should be prepared for that sort of thing. I thought the 15-year-old kid was just a miss for me.
The character, the performance, or all of it?
Everything. Could have been removed. I didn't care for it.
Well, there needs to be a character there, I think, to having a second child in the family makes sense. I didn't have any strong feelings one way or the other on him, I suppose. What else do I like? I like that the movie isn't about secrets and schemes like these movies often are.
Yeah, like normally it comes down to one reveal that it could have happened
right.
45 minutes
earlier. You're waiting and for... Waiting for the dad to, like, the dad is trying to find, the dad is doing what Robert De Niro did to Ben Stiller in Meet the Parents, trying to find what it is to bring him down,
yes.
to show everyone what's wrong with this guy.
But the movie reacts differently to that moment.
Yeah, deals with that differently, and that's good. Right. But then there's also, this is the rule, I guess, for comedies now, there has to be pointless cameos.
Pointless cameos, and there's a big Christmas party that, like, doesn't really go anywhere.
What was there was one in a couple weeks ago, Office Christmas Party had the basketball player that was the big sore thumb gratuitous cameo, and then now we've got Kiss. Sorry to spoil it. Some of Kiss shows up.
Well, and Elon Musk.
That was the very definition of a gratuitous and pointless cameo.
Yes.
Where he had a line and it wasn't even funny.
Nope. Wasn't funny.
But hey, we could get him.
Yeah, a little funnier. Casey Wilson and who was her brother in the film?
Oh, Andrew Rannells.
Yes, it was a little funnier.
Yeah, they got moments. There's, it's funny. This is two very R-rated, raunchy Christmas comedies this season, both of which come down to the plot being about saving the business.
Yeah.
Because this one, it's Bryan Cranston's printing business. He has a paper printing business. This an Office Christmas Party. I guess that's the trend. That's where we are in America right now. We're thinking about saving our businesses at Christmas.
Got to save the business.
I like this one more. I think this is a better movie. Not a lot better, but, you know, somewhat better. I give it a B minus.
I'm getting enough laughs out of both of them, and that's their goal. Seven. A seven for why him?
They never really do answer that question either.
No.
Next up, Assassin's Creed. Here's a little experiment. We'll experiment for you. If I told you there was a movie coming out around Christmas time, end of the year, prestigious movie season, and this movie stars Michael Fassbender, Marion Cotillard, Jeremy Irons, Brendan Gleeson, Charlotte Rampling, you would say, oh, you'd think, oh, maybe a period costume drama.
I'm going to say 8 nominations minimum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say it's definitely going to be 2 hours and 40 minutes long.
Right.
It's
going to be a long one.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And yes, like 3 out of 4 will be knee deep in accents. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. what I would say.
That's how it would be in a perfect world. But since we live in a garbage world, the movie I just described is instead Assassin's Creed, a movie based on a video game. And despite being a video game, it's not a very good movie. Despite that, in spite of being based on a video game.
All right, are you guys listening to me instead of him right now? Listen closely.
Mm-hmm.
This is my favorite based on a video game movie, or at least tied for it. Like maybe the original Mortal Kombat with all of that sweet, sweet, glorious music.
But you know the Mortal Kombat was terrible too, right?
Whoa.
You don't really think Mortal Kombat was a good movie, do you? I'm not talking about like you liked it, it was fun,
no.
You were 13. I mean, a good movie.
I wasn't 13, I was older than that. But no. Mortal Kombat was kind of fun. That's what Mortal Kombat was. I'll give it that.
All
Assassin's
right.
Creed has a lot of good stuff going on for it. It does. I really enjoyed the heck out of this movie. And then occasionally it kept coming a little bit down. But like across the board, I was totally entertained. And then there were some stupid choices thrown in there.
Wow.
That's what I felt like. I was like consistently happy. And then stupidity like smacked me in the face once every 20 minutes. But then like I shook it off and saw something cool again. Crept in again.
This is like that sketch they've been redoing on SNL lately where 3 people have had an experience and Kate McKinnon is the one who had the different experience from the other two. Because now I'm hearing you say that. I'm like, what?
Okay.
Because here was my experience.
Okay, go ahead.
My experience was it started out stupid and boring. And then it stayed stupid and boring. And I didn't like it or anyone in it. No, nothing. I felt nothing for anyone.
Let me give you the accuracy then.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Fassbender is always good in it, mainly because he's trying hard in a movie that he wouldn't necessarily have to try hard in, but he's doing it.
But he's trying hard to do what? What is his character? What's his character doing?
He's frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
He is angry. But he's also looking for a better way, and that's enough.
The situation is his character, Cal Lynch, is a murderer, and just after he's executed for that murder, he wakes up in a facility run by Marion Cotillard, which, you know, so mm-hmm. far so good.
Yep.
No complaints so far. It turns out that he is the descendant of an old Spanish dude from 1492 named Aguilar, who was an assassin. And the assassins, let me see if I got this right. You got a thing called the Apple of Eden. It's an artifact. People want to find this artifact because if you can find that, you can control free will and make people do what you want them to do.
Yes.
And the Knights Templar have been looking for it, and so have the Assassins. The Assassins are out to stop the Knights Templar from getting it. Basically, the Templar and the Assassins are opposed to each other, but they both want the same thing, which is to get the Apple and kill anyone who stands in their way.
Very close. Assassins just want to keep it away.
Want to
so
keep it from,
can,
so it's
they,
not
they
used.
Want,
no, don't want it to be misused. Yeah.
Now, Eric, correct me if I'm wrong. Do you enjoy your free will?
I do like my free will.
Well, then by that rationale, you're siding with the Assassin's Creed.
Well, yes, if their goal is to prevent people from using the Apple, then yes, I endorse that.
That is their goal. And we keep coming back to 1492 in what I think is a super cool way. I love – here's the thing. I don't know exactly how the video game does it, and I hope it doesn't do it this way. But they've in this slightly futuristic world, but based in 2016, they've controlled this thing where if they hook somebody up, they can tap into your ancestry,
right,
and then kind of make you relive it. And by way of fancy technology, we get to kind of see it too.
Yeah.
And so does Marion Cotillard and Jeremy Irons and all those people.
The reason they want to do that is because they don't know where the Apple is. And this guy, Aguilar, 500 years ago, was the last guy who had it. So they need to sort of past lives regression, have Cal Lynch go back and yes, try to find where it is. And yeah, and that's kind of cool how it switches back and forth between the present, where he's attached to this machine and he's kind of jumping around, flying around, swinging at nothing. And then we cut to 1492, where we see what he's swinging at.
Yes.
Now, is
useful flashbacks, in my opinion.
Right, but is
that's, it has to do with the plot. That it was very beneficial,
right,
for me. Go ahead.
But for a while, he's reliving stuff that happened to his ancestor. But then at some point, doesn't he start creating new events, changing? Because they said that he was burned at the stake. But then the scene where he was going to be burned at the stake, he got away.
No. He was not. I don't think they said that.
They said he and his family were burned at the stake.
I didn't think they said that. I don't know. I could be wrong. I could have missed that.
I didn't.
I thought there was a burning at the stake, but he wasn't necessarily burned at the stake.
Maybe it was someone else. Like, yeah, I thought they were saying that that's how he had died. Whatever the case, so yeah, he keeps hopping back in the past to find where the Apple ended up. And in the present, he keeps wanting to not get hooked up to this machine, and he wants to leave this facility. Jeremy Irons is in charge. That's Marion Cotillard's dad.
Jeremy Irons has a problem with, like, look, religion hasn't fixed it. Consumerism hasn't fixed it. Let's get rid of free will.
The plan is to eradicate violence by getting rid of free will, which I guess would work. But
there's too many conveniences that are thrown into this movie where they don't prove it enough, such as a key point when Brendan Gleeson finally shows up, where it's like, well, wait a minute. Bad guys wouldn't give our supposed good guy this kind of access and information on purpose. That's kind of weird.
Right.
And then there's another moment where it's like, well, hang on. This good guy wouldn't feel this way about the Assassin's Creed. He'd feel the opposite way. Mm-hmm. What's going on? Mm-hmm. Like, those are the things that, like, the stupid slapped me in the face a couple of times. But the action, I think, looks pretty cool. Pretty cool. Thankfully, the key here is it's happening in, like, sandy daylight. So you can see enough to feel like you're getting the flow of it.
Yeah, you can see it, but it's pointless action with people that I do not care about, don't know who they are most of the time, don't care why they're fighting. And I know they're trying to get the same thing, but even if the assassins are the good guys, their motto, their creed is everything is permitted. We work in the darkness to serve the light. In other words, the ends justify the means, which probably could be the same creed as the Knights Templar. That could be their same motto.
Well, yeah, but I mean, come on. I mean, yeah, but come on. I mean, yeah, but
no. Well, and you make a valid point.
Okay.
But then, what else don't I like? Anything? Oh, there's also these other guys. There's other apparently ancient assassins in this facility here with Cal Lynch, including one played by Michael Kenneth Williams, Omar from The Wire, and then there's an Asian girl and a white guy. Those people are in the movie solely so they can be in the sequel. They really serve no actual purpose in this movie. And they're hardly even in the movie. But you recognize Michael K. Williams. You're like, oh, Michael K. Williams. And then they don't really do much. There's one a minor purpose that
It does seem weird that some of these other minor assassins, are just kind of hanging out.
Right.
I would have liked a better explanation for that in this facility that, you know, is not necessarily a jail, but yeah.
Yeah.
I honestly liked my confusion in the beginning. I liked trying to figure out what the heck was going on with this. And I just disliked a few of the answers I got. But I really did like the movement of this movie. Like, again, the action sequences totally did work for me. I really liked whatever his journey was on becoming his generational self or whatever.
What was his journey? He started out, he was a murderer. He's a convicted murderer being executed by the state of Texas.
Yes.
And now
that's his from the 80s. Yes, that's his journey. But right. His journey was, in fact, to realize his entire timeline of life. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now that he has, all he wants to do is kill people and save a ball that's called the Apple of Eden.
Right.
And that's awesome.
No. Don't like it. Don't care. Not interested. Didn't find it entertaining. Didn't find it useful at all. I give Assassin's Creed a D.
The opposite of what he said, except I can't go higher than a 7 out of 10 because it does occasionally fail me. But like, I just kept having some really cool curiosity with this fun, silly,
I kept having
interesting
the
movie.
Opposite of that with this dumb, plotting, pointless movie.
Again, just the opposite, where it was like it was really cool to see these actors give it their all in something that normally would just be trash.
The only actor giving it his all was maybe Michael F. Fassbender. There's no way Jeremy Irons was giving it his all. He was giving it maybe 10% of what he has.
No, I think Jeremy Irons
could not have been less interested in being in this movie.
Mm.
Next up, a film that is going into limited release now, and it'll expand Christmas and in the coming weeks, as will we all. We all tend to expand around Christmas time.
Yeah, this film originally, like when we saw it, was 2 hours and 18 minutes, but it's going to expand to the point where it'll probably be like 3.5 hours.
It keeps getting longer. Yeah. No, it's called Fences, and it is based on a play, a Pulitzer Prize and Tony winning play.
By one August Wilson.
August Wilson, and that play was from the 80s. Written in 83, and then it won the Pulitzer Prize in 87. I don't know why there was that delay there. I don't know how that works. Anyway, beloved play. They've been wanting to make it a movie forever, but the issue is that August Wilson, the playwright, wanted it to be made by a black director. And that didn't happen in his life, because he died in 2005. And finally now, they found a black director who could do it and would do it and found the right people involved. And it's a man named Denzel Washington.
Denzel.
He directs it. Is this his directorial debut?
I believe it is.
It is not. He has directed two previous movies.
Two movies.
I remember that now. I totally forgot he directed those. Antoine Fisher in 2002.
Yeah.
And The Great Debaters, 2007.
Oh, goodness.
I totally forgot that he directed those. Wow.
Yeah.
He stars in Fences 2. He plays the title character, Bob Fences.
He plays Troy.
Troy.
And his wife is Rose, played by Viola Davis. And they both did the play on Broadway a few years back.
That's right, yes.
And it is most definitely filmed, shot, and feels wonderfully like a play when you see it.
They didn't change – they barely changed anything from the script, from the play. In fact, the screenplay is just credited to August Wilson, who did not write the screenplay because he died 11 years ago. But that's how – there was some adjusting, but not much. So it's pretty much just the way it was on stage. And they changed some of the settings to make it more cinematic. It's still pretty much all just in the backyard of this home in New York. It's the mid-50s.
Right.
Not New York, Pittsburgh, sorry. They were in Pittsburgh is where we are, in the mid-50s. And Troy is a garbage man, and he works with his friend Bono, played by Stephen Henderson. It was terrific.
Wonderful job by Stephen Henderson.
They got a good rapport going, these two garbage men. We see him coming home from work on a Friday afternoon and hang out in the backyard, and Rose comes out. And Rose and Troy have a great relationship, and they seem like an honest, authentic couple.
Yeah, still hints of flirtiness going on, and Troy, you know, he'll tip back a drink very happily. He is alcohol fueled.
Yes, he is.
And but like little things like dissing Jackie Robinson and just
Troy.
Stuff like that is just he feels so authentically real in this play world. It just every character is just wonderfully brought to life. I think
Troy has an adult son named Lyons who is not Rose's son, and we gather that we figure out that came from a previous relationship, and they have a son together though who's a teenager named Corey. And there's also Troy's brother, Gabriel, played by Michael T. Williamson, who in World War II got injured. Now he's a little bit funny in the head. Not right in the head, poor Uncle Gabriel. And the story of the play, it's not a story kind of play. It's not a story kind of movie, rather. It's a character piece, and we, over the course of these conversations with these characters, we learn more things about them and learn things about their past. And particularly Troy, the character of Troy is filled in, and right. We learn more about where he came from, what made him the man that he is. It's not about story so much as it is about themes and character. He's big on responsibility. He left home when he was 14. He had a terrible dad. And he, you know, the man has to take care of his family. That's the thing now. He rides his teenage son really hard.
Oh, my gosh. Those conversations with Troy and Corey are just like, they're rough. They are rough. Like Corey trying to stand up and be a man. Troy trying to explain his place in the world and what he's owed. It is a wonderful but like trauma-filled relationship that you see.
Yeah, and it does feel very authentic. It felt like, this fortunately has not been my experience, but it felt like observing friends with their strict, somewhat unreasonable fathers. And you can tell there's love behind it, but that the way that this father goes about things is gruffer and more tough love than I'm comfortable with.
Yes.
than I enjoy. I don't enjoy receiving love that tough.
I completely agree.
Such authentic characters. Yeah, and Viola.
And what she has to go through in attempting to either understand, accept, or appreciate Troy is rough as well. And the reason it's called Fences, Troy's working on a fence for part
Rose,
of
the, Rose has got him building a fence in the backyard. It's been an ongoing thing she's trying to get him to do. It's a very – you said it does feel like a play, and it does, and it feels very theatrical, and the acting is theatrical. There's a lot of acting in this movie.
Yes.
It's a very bigly acted. Not over the top, not hammy, but there are big emotions.
Just so perfect for Denzel Washington because he is he can do that.
He and Viola Davis are both fantastic.
The way that I can accept Denzel Washington going big – it's just like that. Yes, that's what you want from Denzel Washington. You want him to go big. You want him to own the screen when he's there. And he most definitely does in this film.
It's at times kind of a heartbreaking story about Troy, who was a guy who had a messy life and then made good. But that can only last for so long. And his wife, Rose, what she goes through, it can be kind of heartbreaking, but it's the kind of heartbreaking that good theater often is, where it feels cathartic and uplifting and hopeful. And wow, we've been through a great experience here.
Yes.
Seeing these people and seeing their difficult but relatable lives. I found it really very fascinating. I would love to see a live production of this play. I had never seen it before. I knew of it, but had not seen it. And I would like to see it now, which I guess is a good recommendation for the movie. It makes you want to see the play.
And for times, with how heavy it is and everything, it's still a movie that I'm looking forward to seeing a second time.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to revisiting this. It's not
oppressive or depressing or anything. It certainly has light moments.
Yes, it does.
It is terrific, and I give Fences a B+.
That's it?
Sorry.
A 9 out of 10 for Fences for me.
All right. Next up, A Monster Calls.
A Monster Calls.
Don't pick up. Don't pick up.
Why not?
It's because the monster's calling.
How do you know?
I have caller ID.
You should have said you had monster ID.
I don't know which monster it is.
Oh, so that's true.
Just know it's a monster.
It's a monster.
Just a monster.
It's not the monster. No,
A is his initial. Aaron Monster. Aaron Monster calling.
Don't judge me just because of my last name. I'm nice.
It was Monsterstein when my people came over on the boat, but they shortened it.
All right, all right.
Anyway, a monster calls. This sort of a children's movie, kind of fantasy, older children, I guess. Fantasy, yeah. Dark kind of stuff.
It earns its PG-13.
Mm-hmm. You got a 12-year-old boy named Connor. Connor O'Malley in England. And his mom is dying, like all moms in movies. She's got cancer. His mom, that's Felicity Jones.
That's right.
And he's got a sort of a stern grandmother, Sigourney Weaver, that's helping out. And young Connor gets bullied at school.
The usual stuff.
Kind of in his own imagination. He likes to draw. And then there's a tree outside that comes to life. And it's a big, tall tree man, like the Ents in Lord of the Rings.
Or like
John Kerry. It looks like John Kerry.
Yeah.
And it's the voice of Liam Neeson. And he becomes Connor's, not friend, really.
No, it's his, the Scrooge, Christmas Carol. It's like, you will be,
Is the Jacob Marley?
Right.
I mean, he's nice and all. Like, he's a teacher Connor, and he helps him. But he's there. This is kind of one of my issues with the film is I never saw like a lot of affection in that relationship.
here was my thing. The film it begins and it's like, hey, guess what? We're gonna get you to cry. That's how it felt. And so for the first two thirds, I was just like. I was interested and I was engaged.
Here's what's happening. The monster, tree monster, he has to tell Connor three tales. And then after that, Connor will have to tell him his nightmare. And the tales, we see them there, then they're watercolor animated. They're quite lovely, little fairy tale kind of things. And they teach lessons. Meanwhile, in the real world, Connor is dealing with his pent-up anger and sadness about his dying mom, et cetera.
Bullies, etc. With that, I found it weird because Connor was like, well, I don't want to tell you that.
Right.
Right? Like, so it was weird that it wasn't a deal. Like,
no, it wasn't
there
a deal
wasn't,
at all.
There
no.
wasn't a trade. It was no. just like, hey, I'm a monster and this is what's going to happen.
Tree monster. When you're the tree monster, you make the rules.
Yeah. So anyway, I was engaged, but I was never sad.
No.
Even though, again, the whole movie was gearing up to be that. And then, third act, it won. And I bawled my little eyes out. I couldn't believe it. It was one of my last movies of Fantastic Fest. And it, you know how you've always talked about, like, you're almost at your wit's end?
Right.
I do feel like I need to see this film again, but I wonder if I even want to because I had probably the best experience with it. It couldn't have gone better.
And seeing it again probably will not make you like it more.
That's right.
Probably not improve. Yeah, and you're certainly not the only one who was emotionally affected by it. I saw plenty of reactions along those lines from other people, and I, you know, fully was open to that. It did not have that effect on me. It's interesting. This and the BFG and Pete's Dragon, three movies this year about kids who have giant monster friends, and it was the remake that made me cry.
I still haven't seen Pete's Dragon. I look forward to it, and I look forward to crying during it. It's probably going to be a guarantee that I will cry.
And Monster Calls. Like I get the parts. I get why it's sad. Like sure, yep. I get it. But it. It just had little impact on me. I think it's a well-produced movie. It looks great, and the kid's good. Lewis McDougall is the kid's name.
He's really good. The director of the film.
J.A. Bayona.
Yeah, this is the guy behind The Orphanage and is it The Impossible or Impossible? The Impossible, right?
The Impossible, yes, about the tsunami.
Those are two films that I definitely like more. But at the same point, like, this is a guy who, like, he has to direct kids for the rest of his time as being a director because he gets so much out of them single time.
Oh, so because he's good at that one thing, he should just always only do that one thing forever?
Yes, because so many others are bad at it.
Oh, I see. So he should sacrifice whatever else he might like to branch into.
He should.
So that you could have some good child performances.
Maybe he doesn't want to branch.
You don't know.
But you don't either.
I'm saying that if he wants to, he should
be
allowed
to. Here's what I'm saying. I hope he still directs kids in the future because he's really good at it. There, okay?
Much better.
I pulled back a little bit.
I can be on board with that because he is very good at it. Yeah, and I think he's a good director, and this is well-directed as far as that goes. The story just didn't connect with me. I didn't feel any really human connection to it other than the obvious way of, oh, it's a kid whose mom is dying. But like I said, there's no affection with the kid and the monster, especially.
I was practically telling the screen, like, look, nice try. It's just not happening. And then, bam.
I give it a C+.
It's a 7 out of 10 for me.
All right. So lots of movies, as you see, and there's still more coming out. And there's also, aside from those movies that we just reviewed, there are movies that came out that we reviewed in the weeks past that now may be expanding to be where you are now.
Yeah, so, check out what's out.
Lots of movies, and there's still more to come.
Open up that newspaper and see what's down at the local theater.
Yeah, we haven't seen the new Scorsese movie, Silence. We haven't seen it yet.
No,
they're not screening it for a local press until January. But it's out in New York and L.A. on Christmas, I think.
Oh, New York and L.A. Who do you think you are?
Think they're so special.
Ugh.
Makes me so mad. If you want to watch something on DVD, not a lot came out on DVD this week because this week for DVD releases is really an insult because what you're saying is this is a movie that you know no one's going to buy as a Christmas gift.
Which is weird.
Or maybe as a last minute, like very last minute Christmas gift came out this week.
I think one of them for a dear old dad makes perfect sense.
That's true. Magnificent Seven for the dad on your list. Actually, and you know what? Who is more likely to be the recipient of a last minute gift than dad?
That's right. That's
so
right.
Actually, now that I think about this, actually very shrewd planning. They released Magnificent Seven this week.
I'm now actually annoyed that I convinced my dad to go see that movie alone in the theater because otherwise that would have been problem solved for me.
That's for sure. Yeah. Also, Snowden is out this week. I don't know who you would buy that for.
I don't know if I'll ever see it. I just don't know.
Oh, that's right. You missed it.
I missed it.
I wouldn't say you were missing it. Also, Storks is out, which we didn't see.
It's not real.
It was a cartoon, yeah. And this other movie called Goat that I don't think even got a theatrical release, but it was at Sundance this last year, and it's about college hazing.
Oh.
And one of the Jonases in it, Nick Jonas, Joe Jonas.
What?
Hector Jonas, and some other people. Anyway, and it's okay, but I'm surprised to see it on the list of DVDs because I don't think it went to theaters at all. It just sort of appeared. But if you want to see a movie about, you know, hot college guys hazing each other, Goat is for you. Some of the hazing involves a goat. That's why they call it Goat. You know, goats.
Totes.
Whatever. Those are the DVDs. Just watch National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, like you always do. Well, that brings us to the end of the Christmas episode of our show. It's also the Hanukkah edition. Christmas and Hanukkah overlap this year.
That's right.
So happy whatever you're having. To recap, here's what we talked about on this week's show. A Monster Calls. We both kind of didn't like that much, but
one of us it kicked one of our emotional butts in the end.
One of us, yeah, but not very hard.
Yeah. No, but still,
yeah.
I mean, tissues were needed.
Sure, and that's that might just be New York and L.A. now, and it'll expand in a couple of weeks. Why him? Is everywhere, and we kind of felt about the same way. I liked Why Him more than I liked Monster Calls.
Yeah.
Had its moments. If it's really Bryan Cranston and Megan Mullally who saved that movie, I think, make that movie
watchable. It's James Franco.
I mean,
it's
he's
all
good
about
too,
James Franco.
But those two as well. And what else? Oh, Fences. Fences is terrific.
It's amazing.
You should see that. That, I think,
one of the best.
I think that's expanding everywhere come Christmas. And then Passengers. is
not good.
Not good and disappointing because it was almost good. It's like it was going toward good, and then instead it slingshotted around good and went somewhere else instead.
That's right.
Very close.
It's the movie you'll watch on HBO, and that's it.
Its trajectory nearly intercepted with good. Nearly. And then Assassin's Creed, which is one of the one of the greatest disagreements we've had.
Yeah, it is.
What did I say? A D? D versus a 7
a
out of 10?
D versus a 7.
That is up there among our biggest disagreements. So make of that what you will, listeners. Oh, this is what we should do whenever we do disagree. Listeners, let us know which one of us you agree with.
Yeah, which one of us is right?
We don't disagree very strongly very often. So when we do, we want to know, we want validation one way or the other. That's it for the show then. We'll be back next week with our top 10 lists for the year.
Ooh, I can't wait to hear what those are for me.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
Thank you.
I'll send the script over next week. So until then, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays and everything. And for Movie BS with Baron Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
I said good day.